little things that people don't even think about, like just the way that you dress to look American, to read as from here versus as an outsider, that, all of that, like the fashion, the hairstyles, the mannerisms, it's so much more than just, I learned the language, that's good enough. It's so more.
Welcome to Latinx in Power, a podcast hosted by Thaisa Fernandes.
Welcome to Latinx in Power. Today, we are talking with Prisca Mojica. Prisca was born in Managua, Nicaragua, but calls Nashville, Tennessee, home. She uses storytelling to educate others about systemic oppression. As a respected speaker, she has shared her stories with college and university students across the United States. Welcome, Prisca. I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to represent Nicaragua.
Incredible. Love it. In this episode, we will discuss Prisca's passion for naming the experience of first-generation Latina immigrants navigating systemic roadblocks. She sheds light on the ways sexism and systemic racism impede success for women and people of color. Additionally, her theological training enables her to explore the relationship between religion, trauma, and white supremacy in the United States. Oh my God, I'm so excited with this conversation.
Me too.
And what does it mean to be a Latina for you?
Today, I think it means a lot of things, but mostly it means community, specifically Latina and immigrant. I think it's a very different experience than being born in the U.S. or being a few generations in. I really connect with a lot of immigrants, even when I was really young when we came to the U.S., but still, it's a different way of thinking. Your parents were thinking differently. Your parents make sense of the politics in the U.S. differently because it's informed by the politics in their country. So it means a lot, but it mostly means community for me.
I love it. And I can totally relate to what you're saying. I also moved to the US 9 years ago. So yeah, I totally get what you say, that like navigating all those new things, creating your community, first finding your community, right? Which is sometimes can be very challenging.
Yeah. And then doing it, if you move to a new city, doing it all over again. And my partner often is like, let's move to another country. I'm like, oh my gosh, no. Doing it once, like I finally feel like I understand things. And I came at 7. Like, I'm not trying to start from scratch again. Like, it is work. And only other immigrants understand that, I think.
Yeah, and I totally get you too, like in the sense that like, now I'm comfortable, now I feel at home, yeah. I'm comfortable with the language and everything, I don't want to live this again.
Yeah,
sometimes I think about that, like moving to another country with another language, I was like, oh my God, I don't want to do this again.
And the codes, like, just like, how do you vote? How do you, what's the humor? Because it saved me a while to understand American humor. Like, popular shows like The Office, it took me forever to, it was season 3 when I was like, oh, okay, I think I understand what's supposed to be funny. All that, it's like little things that people don't even think about, like just the way that you dress to look American, to read as from here versus as an outsider, that, all that, like the fashion, the hairstyles, the mannerisms, it's so much more than just, I learned the language, that's good enough.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's some things you only get when you live in the country. I remember watching movies and not finding it funny. And now, I don't know, if I'm watching a movie, they go to the DMV and they make jokes. I totally get it because I know what is DMV, like what it means, but also like the struggle.
Or references. Like I meet people now in Nashville and they're like, yeah, my grandfather fought on D-Day or whatever. And I'm just like, I don't have context other than books for that stuff. And so like, I just feel so like I'm catching up, even like celebrities that everybody knows, like Bing Crosby or something. And I still don't know who that is. It's like such a, but you want to talk about Cantinfla, Lucero, like I could talk about another slew of cultural references, but I don't have American ones still. So it's like, you're just always learning and you're always behind on something.
Yeah, true. I'm curious to hear more about your personal journey as a first generation in the United States and how this influenced your work.
Yeah, I write a lot about specifically being first generation because there was so much that was happening. When we first moved here, we were immigrant neighborhood. And I didn't know that there would be a difference when we moved to another neighborhood that had a lot of first, second, third generation. So the fact that my mom didn't speak English was like a thing that I realized that a lot of their parents, a lot of people in my class didn't speak Spanish, but they were Cuban, Puerto Rican, Colombian. They were from all these Latin American countries, but hardly anyone spoke Spanish. A lot of them spoke to English with their parents. So it was just, I felt different even among people that were Latinos or Latine, just like me. So writing about the experiences that I've written about has been about naming stuff because that were very particular to my experience as a first in the American school system, as a first trying to apply to college, as a first going to a master's program. And what happens when you have so many questions, but also you don't even know what questions you need to be asking. That is a very immigrant and first generation experience. So yeah, I feel like it's the reason why I started to write, because I started to finally start to have answers and was like, oh, I need to write this down because it can help someone else figure that stuff.
Yeah, and brings back to what it means to be a Latina, what you just said, like community, looking after another. And I have been interviewing a lot of like first generations in this podcast in the previous seasons. And it's very interesting because a lot of times you are the first in your family doing something, going to college or working tech. So it's very lonely. And what you said about not even know which questions to ask, right? Because I think for folks who are not in this situation, they might think, oh, there's the internet. But no, if you don't know even the questions you should be asking, like how are you going to use the internet? How are you going to find what you need, right?
Yeah, because I had the internet. I don't know what that means. And sometimes when you find the answer, it's just another question.
Yes, exactly. Or sometimes you are overwhelmed. I remember when I moved here and was building my career again, and I was so overwhelmed with the amount of stuff that was available. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so behind. I'm so overwhelmed because I need to do a lot and I don't even know how to start. When I started to, I think the first community that I was really part of was the Latinas in Tech. And I had other Latinas helping me and pointing the right direction because I was so overwhelmed with the amount of resources, the amount of things that I needed to do. And they were like, no, you should do this first and that. And I was like, oh, okay. And, you know, we have the internet, we have everything, but it's just so hard.
It's exceptionally hard. And the shame that comes because people will be like, how did you not know that too? You get that a lot. I've gotten so much of even people being like, why are you so old for being in school? It was like, because immigrants often get held back. Our education isn't considered good enough. We come to this country and we get held back. So I was 8 years old in first grade. We're not even on the radar. So not only are we like lacking the information, but if nobody's extending that information, we're also being shamed for not knowing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so sad. And I really like your work and your writing, and you explore the intersection of sexes and the development of girls and women. And I'd love to talk more about that and how this relates to your advocacy work that you do.
Yeah, I grew up in a really traditional Latine household. Like, gender is very prescriptive still in Latin America. I think with the Christianization of Latin America, the lack of education and resources in a lot of our countries, they're just like in the US, gender binary, we're still finding it. Like there's all these anti-trans laws that are coming in, but we have more vocabulary for stuff that I grew up just being told you're a girl and this is what you're expected future is, which is to be a mom and to be a stay-at-home mom, preferably, because that is like, if you're lucky, you get to become. And it was everything. It shaped everything. It shaped the way that I was not encouraged with my grades in school. but I was encouraged if I washed dishes. One of the gifts my dad gave me was a pan, a cooking pan one. He was so happy to give me a pan because I was 14 and I could start cooking meals and I was starting my own collection of kitchen stuff. You know, like that's just how I grew up. The expectation was that I was going to have a traditional female role in my household one day. And so that limited my options a lot. And I didn't even think that I could be something else. So I write a lot about that because I think that a lot of us are still growing up in these very strict gender binaries. A lot of Latinas specifically are growing up in these really strict binaries. And it does stunt our development, even if we're watching something different on TV. So we have a lot of access to TV where women are being empowered, women are becoming anything they want. Women are, you know, VP, they're like vice presidents, they own businesses. But a lot of those women on TV don't look like me still. And the shows where they do look like me, they get canceled really quickly. So I don't get to see us being something so much more than what my parents are telling me that women like me are supposed to do. So it does impede our development, and the culture hasn't done a lot to cancel out that messaging.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even if you try to be different, it's also tricky, right? Because people ask you questions, uncomfortable questions, or like shame you for deciding to do something else with your life. But it's a process. And I don't like to think that we are behind, but maybe I don't know which wording will describe that, but I definitely, especially since I'm living here for so many years, when I go back to Brazil, I notice some things that are like, oh my God, I can't believe people are still talking about that. For example, people talk a lot about how the other person looked like, if they gained weight, if they lost weight. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe people still doing that. But I think it is a process. Sometimes I think things are changing. Maybe things in my bubble is changing. For example, I have a lot of conversations with my mom. And sometimes I tell her, Mom, it's not okay to say that. Do you know about this? And I see that she's changing too. And sometimes you say something and we talk about it. So we have a really good conversation about it. But it's very tricky how, I don't know, it's very challenging sometimes as well.
And it's also the codes too, because I live in the South and women get married still really young in the South. And the gender binary still feel very real in even white families in the South. But I think I'm not as familiar with white families. I don't understand. It's more subtle in ways that they talk about even body, like you are expected to be a certain size. These family dynamics, and you are shunned for getting bigger, but it's different. That's the codes of, I don't understand their codes. But when I see it in my house, it feels so in my face. When somebody's like, te estás engordando. And I'm like, I don't hear it like that when I'm in white spaces, but something is happening that's similar, but I can't catch it always in white spaces. I think it's that more than anything. But yeah, it is like bubbles, because I do have those conversations with my family. But sometimes it feels like, I don't know if that happens to you, but it feels like mi mami holds space for me to be different. But then my sister tries to challenge the things that I challenge her and be more like me. She'll be like, no, you're not like Priscilla. Like, you got to behave. She could do what she wants. And I'm always like, that's not improvement.
Yeah, that's a good point. Oh my God, that's so interesting. And another topic that I wanted to bring that I think it's so interesting, I love to hear more from you, is that you discuss decolonization on Western notions of success. And can you explain to us this concept and provide some examples? I'd love to dive a little bit deeper into that.
Yeah, I think we get caught up in this idea that what it means to be successful is very linear. It means doing really well in school, going to good college, getting a really solid job with a 401k, and moving up the ladder in your employment, retiring. Like, that's like what we think of, like, wow, you did it. But I think, like, my family, my dad's a musician. He's never had a 401k. My mom didn't go to college, but that doesn't mean that they don't experience success in their lives. That doesn't mean that because they're not attached to these institutions of educational success or corporate success or whatever, that they're not successful and that they're not experiencing celebrations worthy of the ones we give to you graduated from college. That's a big deal. Like, no, you took a certificate course and you learned more Spanish. That is freaking cool. Or you like love your family, you raise wonderful kids. That can also be success because you might not have got all the access to do all this other stuff. That doesn't make you less than. And in my mind, I think for a really long time, I put things as like, this is better and this is failure. That really messed with me when I realized that success also means family connections. It's a lot of luck if you don't have family money, if you don't have financial support from your family. It's a lot of luck. It's a lot of privileging intersections. Like the fact that I've had the education that I have opens a lot of doors for me. The fact that I am a woman of color, but I'm not a Black woman, has also meant that some doors are open for me where they would be shut for Black women. So it's just being aware of all the systems at play. And being able to not attach your worth to what we're told makes us worthy, rather deciding I'm going to be proud about this thing, even if on paper, it's not something that we would consider wonderful and successful into bragging about. So that's what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's very interesting. And also, I was thinking about like the media, how also the media influences that in terms of like movies or TV series, because it's everything we say, we see, right? It's just like you graduate from school and find the love of your life, get married, have kids and have a big house and that's it.
Yeah.
And which is great, but some people don't want that. Or maybe you want to travel, or maybe you want to do your own thing, and which means struggling, but also feeling happy about like creating something that you believe in, putting this thing out there. And I love that you mentioned that, because I feel we don't talk about this that much and we don't have a lot of references.
Yeah. And I think inadvertently, if we overvalue ourselves in relationship to institutions, we are inadvertently devaluing people who aren't. And people who usually don't have access to that stuff are poor, are of color. They're not usually white. So like who we're devaluing are the people who we should be uplifting more. And we don't realize that. We're just like, I'm so proud I got a college degree. And then you could be proud. That's not the point. But when we commit our whole identity to these successes, we are undervaluing those who can't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You also talk about the importance of storytelling in addressing systemic oppression and promoting social change. I love to hear more about it. And I think this notion of storytelling is something that I learned when I moved to the US. For example, I realized that when I was building my career here, working, and I realized that I didn't know how to tell my story. And I was like, oh, starting from the beginning, then going to the end, and then going to the middle from the beginning again. It was like a mess. And now I know how to do this. And I feel it's so, so, so important. And again, I think it's another thing we don't talk much.
And it's like a way to connect with people that's, I think, more authentic than what we're told in school. You go to school and you sit down and somebody, your teacher, professor, assumes you know nothing. And they just like are giving you information and you have to take it as fact. And then you get a degree and you graduate. And like, what do you do with that? You go and do the same to other people. You just assume they don't know anything because they don't have the degree you have. And then you talk to them from top down. And it hasn't worked. What was the big, I think, shift for me was I got my master's degree. I'm the first in my family history to get a master's degree. Of all the Mojicas and all the Rodriguez that have ever been in my family line. And so I went home and I started to do that thing of like, I'm going to teach my family all the things I learned. And it didn't work. It did not work. I remember my mom being really pissed because she's like, why are you talking to me like that? Like, me está faltando respeto. Like, that's not, that's how you talk to people. And I realized like, yes, I'd gained all this important knowledge, but they didn't give me the tools to talk about any of it. And the way that they gave me the tools was very, you're dumb, I'm smart. And you can't talk to people like that. You just can't. That's not how the world works. It's the reason why a lot of people don't end up in college. Not everybody learns that way either. So what I started to do, because I do come from a family of storytelling, it's the men and women tell a lot of stories. I know how all my tías met their husbands through storytelling. I could tell you my dad's version and my mom's version of how they met each other.
Which one's better?
hers for sure. Yeah, but I know all their ghost encounter stories. I know we would sit, because we get blackouts in Nicaragua a lot, and we would just sit in mesadoras outside, and everybody would just tell stories the whole night. You just like spend like 6-7 hours telling stories. So I just had to tap into that, and I had to learn it, because it's muscles that you stop using through schooling and through like just doing these institutional checklists. You forget that you have these like muscles of like communicating with people. And so I started practicing again. And with my mom, it was how I was like, okay, she's not responding to this, but I do think that these conversations are important and she's worth my effort. So, and I just started being like a kid, like being like, this scar is from when this happened. And then this scar is from when this happened. And I found, and then she would be like, oh, I have scars like that too. Instead of like, you know nothing, I know everything. It was more like, let's be vulnerable and hopefully we can both grow from these conversations.
Incredible. I love that. And which advice would you give to someone who is passionate about social justice and want to make a difference in their communities?
I think there's a lot of ways to do this. So find what your calling is in it. My calling is not found. I call it my ministry. My ministry isn't to teach white people how to treat us better. But some people think like they're called to do that and they really want to make the effort. They want to figure out how to teach, how to talk. Mine is teaching other Latinas or helping other Latinas see what's happening better. So like really sit what feels right. We literally are one person. All we can do is to not drain ourselves, because activism work is really exhausting. I've been on the end of doing everything, being at every rally, being at every door knock, and it's really hard to sustain, especially when you're the first daughter of an immigrant family, when the law is reliant on you. So find the thing that you're passionate about. Find the thing that you think will speak to the people that you want to speak to and do it. Don't overthink it. Just do it and be okay with learning along the way. Be okay with making mistakes. I think a lot of people get into activism and then somebody's like, hey, that was like a little racist. You shouldn't do that. And they're like, oh, I don't want to do this then. Fuck this. And then they leave the movements because of that. And that's more harmful. Like, we have to be really humble and be really okay with making mistakes. Be really comfortable with saying apologies when those mistakes are made. And keep it moving. Because if community and liberation is the goal, then it's going to take a lot of patience and a lot of willingness to learn along the way.
Mm-hmm. Incredible. And which advice would you give to someone who is like trying to figure out their calling?
I think it could be a lot of things, but first find the medium. So if speaking is the thing, listen to what other people are saying, listen to podcasts, go watch YouTube videos. If making content is the thing, then go follow the pages that are doing it. But find the medium that feels good and then research it. There's so many people doing so many cool things on different mediums. So find it, build community with the people in those spaces. Like if you're going to commit to podcasting, then find other podcasters. Don't do this stuff like you're an island. It's not sustainable. So find your community and like roll with it. I think it's a lot of trial and error. I think I thought I was going to be really good at some things that I turned out to not be really good at. So try different things that speak to you. And I think eventually you'll figure it out, but it takes a lot.
That's a really good advice. I like it a lot. And we are getting to the end of this episode. I want to thank you for your time. I'm really enjoying our conversation. You're making me think a lot, which is great. So we are here all about sharing, and I love to hear from you. Which resource helped you in your journey and that you like to share with us today? It can be books, a person. Like it can be anything. I think this is a very personal question because it can be a lot of different things.
Yeah, books. I've always been an avid reader. I don't really like music. I know that's really weird to say, but I don't really do music. I'm not really a good TV watcher. I kind of, my eyes glaze over and I end up in my head 6 hours later. I'm like, what was I watching? But I love reading, and reading has been a way that I have found I've learned the most. I connect with people the most, and it's turned into what my medium. So I write books now, and I hope to create the kind of books for people who are interested in the kind of writing that I was seeking for years. But it's been a lot of books. I mean, if y'all could see behind me, I have 2 bookshelves full of books, and these aren't even all my books. These are just the immediate books. So I love reading. I think books are amazing and will change the world.
I agree. Incredible. Thank you so much for your time. I'm going to leave the last minutes for you to share anything you want to share, and also where people can find you.
Yeah. So everywhere online, I'm Prisca Dorcas, PRISCADORCAS. That's my first name and middle name. My book is out in English and in Spanish. So it's been translated. It's for brown girls with sharp edges and tender hearts. I should say the Spanish name, but it's so...
Say it.
Para chicas de piel canela. And the rest will come up. And I'm writing my second book under contract. I'm working on an anthology. I hope to write a children's book, a cookbook, but I have a lot of books underway. So stay in touch online and you'll see everything that I'm into or up to.
Incredible. I love it. A cookbook, a children's book. Oh my God. Incredible. Thank you so much.
Thank you.